Farris, thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast episode. And actually, just before we hit record, for those who are watching or listening to this, yes, you are seeing us on separate screens, not in person. The irony being, we spend so much time together at masterminds and face-to-face, yet we've still not been able to get anything in the diary. So rather than make people wait, we've scheduled this in on a recording. So apologies, it's not in person. That being said, you'll still get everything you need from this episode. So Farris, those who don't know you, how would you describe who you are and what you do today?
I will describe myself. I've discovered, actually, that I have superpowers.
Ooh.
A previous podcast, a week ago, we had a conversation with a friend of mine. And she said, she stopped me. And she said, Farris, do you realize you've got superpowers? And I was like, do I? And my superpowers are two, actually. Well, one leads to the other. The one is I'm a master of burning ships and taking islands. But the mystical superpower that I have is whatever I believe I achieve. Mm. Every set of goals that I wrote down, as far back as I remember, or like since I came to England, it was that, really, without realizing that I'm actually following a system. Mm-hmm. It has been that everything I put my mind into, I make a reality. Mm. So it is kind of the law of attraction, and you manifest what you visualize, and whatever you ask, the universe will answer. So, yeah.
So you're a manifest, a visualization expert, goal achiever.
Goal achiever. Let's call it that way.
Yes. You see, we met quite a long while ago now. We first met. How long ago was it we first met? It must have been like 2017, 18, maybe, if not earlier.
Exactly, precisely.
Perfect.
22nd of October, 2018.
Oh my word, you remember to the date, and that's something that's important that we're going to touch upon because these dates are important.
October, now you made me just realize that, like, major things happen for me around October time. I need to look up these dates.
See what the important, see what the
important thing, yeah.
So this is the Farris that we know today, someone who lives life to the fullest, in abundance, massive mindset, massive goals achieved as a result of said mindset. But not everybody knows how you kind of started this process. And if we go back even further, what led to this? Because the person we see before us today achieving great successes, and we've got some really exciting things to talk about where you're taking that now, you know, in terms of multiple business owner, having set up things that are really taking on a life of their own in a really short space of time. That being said, you were born into quite humble beginnings in Syria. Your life was completely different. So for those people who don't know your story, have never heard of you before, or have not understood how you've become to be the person you are today, tell us what life was like for you kind of starting out.
Yeah. In a nutshell, well, yeah, you're right. I'm from Syria. I was born in Syria. I lived there till I was 18. So very humble background, highly educated family. Education is a big thing for us. In fact, education is the way out of poverty and achieving things. Resources, especially in our city, are very limited. So your ways out or to change your life is through education. And that's what my parents did. My father died. I lost him when I was three. But both of my uncles, who kind of looked after me, and they were the father figures in my life, mm-hmm. they were very highly educated, an eye surgeon and a civil engineer. And an education is a big thing in our family. So I followed steps, but my uncle at that time, he moved to England in the mid-90s. So after I finished my high school, I said, let's cut the chase. Don't do what we did. And come to the country, come to the West early, learn the language. And, you know, the younger you come, the easier it gets for you. So I moved to England nearly 22 years ago, age 18. No English at that point.
Very scary. Despite the fact that you're from a highly educated family who, you know, value education and the fact that you had not necessarily just the humble beginnings, but the challenging beginnings, you know, losing anyone close to you is difficult at any age, but to have grown up without that actual father in your life, passed away, as you say, when you were three. You know, you've got a really strong matriarch of the family and your mum is, you know, up there in the most important people within your life, but you had uncles who stepped in, education really, really important. You know, how big of a challenge was it moving to the UK at 18 with no knowledge of the English language, knowing you're leaving mum behind?
Oh, wow. Woof. Now you got me there. You know, every time we... Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, Mum, at the moment, going through a tough health challenge. But yeah, she's the rock, really. She's my why. You know, she sacrificed her life for us, and so it was really difficult leaving her behind and coming in. But she was very strong. She never showed any weakness for us, really. Like,
she wanted the best for you.
Absolutely. She always say, look, you know, go get it, son, you know. I believe in you.
That's okay. I know this is something, like, we talk quite often about the importance of the reason why and the people who we are. And I know that your mum is a really important figure. And I'm so sorry to hear that she's going through health troubles, but I know that you're going to be helping and supporting.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It makes it all worthwhile. It makes you realize why we're doing the things that we're doing, because there are definitely days where you think, why am I doing all of this? And, you know, if you're the chief burner of boats, it's like, shit, now how do I get back?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, seriously, because I did burn a ship when I moved over, you know. I was like, this is it. I'm coming to this country. I must make it here. looking back. Unfortunately, Syria, when I left Syria, it wasn't as bad as it is now, but it was very bad. There was no future for me in there. So I knew that my future is in this country. My future is here. So I have to make it. I had no, there's no other road. This is it. It's one way. All or nothing. So I literally decided to cut the Arabic language out of my daily activities. No Arabic music, no news, no TV, nothing. No Arabic friends. I had no Arabic friends. Was
the purpose of that to make it non-negotiable? I'm going to learn English, I'm going to live in the Western world, I'm going to play by the rules, etc. It was literally a case of putting pause on everything.
Yeah, it was a survival call, really, because I knew that I'll be competing in this country. I'm not competing with Arabic speakers, I'm competing with English speakers. So I must master the language. I must do it. There's no other way.
How did you learn?
And how quickly? Well, initially I came in to study English because I wasn't accepted to go straight into the A-levels.
Yep.
So, I remember when I did the entry exams, I was like a lower intermediate level. Mm-hmm. One word I remember, I think you have to fill in the gap. It was actually a word, tenant. That was the very first time. I did not know what tenant means. and I was like, yeah. And then my uncle gave me lots of grief. I was like, don't you know, like, it's a simple word. Like, have you not? And I was like, I didn't, you know.
I've heard English before.
Yeah. And then anyway, so I remember, I scored. Yeah, it was lower intermediate. in there, and lower. You have to be at least upper intermediate or proficiency, I think, in the English class certification at the time, so I can go jump on the A levels. But yeah, so I started there. I did a couple of months of English courses, but then I tried it. I went to the college. I said, look, I want to do science subjects. So do I really need English? Or like, obviously I need English, but do I have to be fluent in English to do it? And so I chose all the science subjects. So they accepted me. And actually, they accepted me two months later after I arrived. And that was really tough. Tony, I didn't know. Actually, fast forward 4 or 5 years down the line, I've discovered that actually I'm not only that English is not my first language, I'm badly dyslexic.
Yep. So the challenge was even greater.
Greater. And the other challenge that I had was to convince people that I was actually dyslexic. It was like, oh, it won't work because English is not your first language, so the test won't apply to you. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll live with it. And the funny thing, once I went to a student support officer, I said, look, I'm struggling with this. And she said, she looked at me, I was like, well, you've done well enough so far, so you've got a coping mechanism anyway, so I can't help you with anything.
Wow. So what way I live in? Like, first of all, obviously, you know, I'm English. I speak one language. I studied French and I studied Spanish. I did really well at them at school. You know, I actually studied to quite a high level. I got A's in GCSEs, etc. But then I stopped. And like anything in life, you stop doing it. You know, I can order 2 beers in Spain when I'm on holiday, and that's pretty much the level of my Spanish at the minute, because I consider myself, and I'm English, so I'm allowed to say it. I believe that many of us, I'm not going to sweep in statement, but a lot of us become quite ignorant because so many people are willing to learn the English language. That being said, if it's not your first language, it's not easy. You know, I've got children now studying English and I can't even understand the terminology for the part of the English language that they are learning. It's very difficult. We have the grammar police with the there spelt differently, etc. So it's not an easy language to learn. And you couple that with the fact that you were, you know, struggling because of dyslexia, but the fact that when you asked for help, you were told you've managed this far. I think that's what's wrong with the world today. You know, asking for help is a huge, huge thing. And we're going to touch upon that because I know you faced many a challenge while reaching your levels of success. But even in instances where people are asking for help to be told, or you've managed thus far. So is this where a bit of your kind of resilience and your need to succeed in spite of it came from?
Well, it made no difference in any way. I was like, okay, if I get help, that would be a bonus. If not, all right, okay, we'll find life goes on, really. So that never stopped me. I moved on. With things, and it was another coincidence, really, that I met a random person at work, and I was telling her that I'm so badly dyslexic, and no one believes me. She said, "I believe you. Come and I'll do the test for you." And you know, it was a long story. I probably sorry for another day, really, how that came about. But she ended up doing the test completely free of charge. It took, like, she did a really, really thorough test at me, and you show that, yeah, I've got high IQ, but very low dyslexic kind of scoring. So, and she said, okay, we'll take that report to the university and show them, you know, and she gave me it was like 80 pages report, full report on everything she did. And then they believed me then. Yeah. But I didn't get any support after that anyway, because at that time I didn't have the English passport. So you don't get any of the gadgets or the toys. The only support that I had, they gave me extra time in my exams. So I had some extra time, but I never used it anyway.
You never used the additional time.
I never used the additional time. So I was done on time. I've done it for so long. Finishing on time with everybody else. So.
Is this a bit of a thing, like a challenge accepted? You know, you've known me long enough now to know that one of my phrases is that I am partially fueled by a desire to succeed and be successful. But, you know, quite a big portion of me is fueled by spite for everyone who tells me I can't or
I can't do it.
Is there a little bit of that inside of you? Like, okay, in spite of this, watch me go. Is there a little bit of that inside of you?
I think there were definitely, there's a bit of a competition spirit inside me that, I'll do it anyway.
But then obviously, in spite of those challenges, coming to a new country with a language that you didn't know, knowing that you had to pass all of these tests before you could get to do your A-levels, but it wasn't a case of stopping there. Obviously, education, as you mentioned earlier, one was really important to yourself and your family. So then you went on to study, am I right in thinking, not one but two different degrees?
Correct. Well, that was another coincidence. Oh, look where did that come from?
Because you raised your hands. So the Riverside is congratulating you for not one degree, so well done.
Well, again, on the 2 degrees, that was another story as well, because I was actually turning out. I wanted to do medicine in the first place, but I didn't get into medicine. So I did two years of A levels.
Yep.
But I didn't get the conditional offer that was offered to me. So I didn't make it into medicine. So I took a year out and I went, that was the fighting spirit. And I was like, you know, screw it. I said, look, I'll take care of myself. Don't worry. I'll pay for my expenses. I moved out and I was working like literally 24/7 at some point. You know, working in an office during the day, mm-hmm. come to West London, finish around 6 o'clock, take the suit off, put Domino's costume on, put the Domino's sign on the car and go deliver pizzas for a few hours. And in the evening, I'll get my free pizza. And I used to sell the pizza. Because you get bored of eating pizza all the time. So the free pizza that I used to get, I used to do night shifts at the hospital. So people was like, okay, what do you want tonight? I'll order you pizza. So I get cash for that pizza, my free dinner.
So you've always been a bit of a hustler.
Oh yeah, you could say that. And then work during the night. Do a night shift in the hospital, doing like porter, you know, pushing beds around and that. So I've done that for a couple of months, and then I think the universe had told me to stop. I crashed my car because there's no way you can continue like that. But anyway, the story that I wanted to get to is how I actually chose to do optics and how I ended up in optics. Is I remember still the day. It was 19th of December 2004. I received my last rejection letter from medical schools, and that was a crushing thing for me. And I was like, okay, this is the end. You know, I can't. You know, everything I've worked for, and now I'm already like 3-4 years behind my peers. I'm not even at uni, and now I can't even do medicine. And receiving that letter in the morning, going to the hospital in the evening with wearing the blue shirt with the blue trousers, pushing bins around and walking into A&E where all the doctors wearing the white coats and the nurses and all that. So doctors are up here and I'm just down here. And I was like, this is it. My future is over. It was very heartbreaking night. I went, but it was... That was the reason I remember that night, because everything is has happened for a reason. It always does, right? So after midnight, you know, at that level of depression, I wanted some peace. So I went to the prayer room, turned the lights off, and I just sat there. I was praying to God, saying, you know, what do I do? Like, how do I move on from here? You know, medicine is out the window. And what do I do? And literally, I had that spark of genius then. And I was like, well, hang on a second. Those who study, who do eyes, what do they study? I didn't even know the word at the time, optometry. I knew the place optician, where you can go and buy glasses. But so what do you study, or what qualification do you need to do that? At that time, I had my Nokia, 3310 at the time. So there was no smartphones. There was no Google in there. So I went to the theater and I searched on Yahoo how to become an optician or what optician or something along these lines. And actually Specsavers popped on the list. And I was like, oh, okay, career with Specsavers and how to become an optician. I was like, okay, well, I like the sound of that. What does that degree called? And it's called optometry. And I applied there and then.
So from going from, you know, the heartache of medicine being something that you'd always wanted to study, it was the only thing that you planned to study, you know, the roller coaster of applying repeatedly and getting rejection after rejection, which undoubtedly knocked your confidence, to then receiving that kind of final letter and knowing this is it, it's not on the cards for me anymore. We were talking just before, and I was saying about asking for help, and that previously you'd asked for help and never received it, asking help from a physical being. And this time around, you did it in a completely different way. Exhausted from the job of being the porter, the Domino's delivery driver, working in an office. And would it be fair to say it was kind of a, you know, last ditch attempt, what now? Please help me. And you went to the prayer room, you prayed. And what, did it come just as a like thought process? It came out of the blue,
completely out of the blue, completely, literally, I don't know what you want to call it, download, a spark of genius. Yeah. It's just, would I do it?
And that led you on a whole different path, because there is many people who know you now as the property optician. It's stuck with me since the first time I heard it, property optician, helping investors see deals clearer, which really, you know, it made me laugh because you moved into optometry. So you applied there and then you got accepted. Where was it you studied? You studied in...
Well, actually, I did not get accepted. This is the other thing. That's why I got 2 degrees, because my grades in the end were not good enough for optometry either. But they offered me an alternative degree, which was it was in optics. So I did optical management. So it was a major in optics and minor in management and business. So I did that for 3 years. I was offered and then 5th of October. I'm telling you, there's something about October.
You're going to Google that.
Yeah. 5th of October, I got my very first job at Specsavers. I was the Saturday boy who stuck in the filing cabinet. Probably the worst job for me anyway. The biggest guy in the team, stuck in the smallest room in the building, and English not the first language, and badly dyslexic, in charge of filing.
Right. So probably not the best role for you, but I suppose another lesson in resilience, because, you know, you've taken a lot of nose rejection, beatings along the way. You know, you want to study this. No, that's not on the cards for you anymore. Call it divine intervention. Call it a download. Call it a cry for help. You got this idea to study, you know, in the world of optometry. However, didn't get accepted into that, took the Saturday job, and a bit of a full circle moment from that date in December seeing this Specsavers advert. You know, if we fast forward, you not only worked your way out of the little back office with the filing cabinet, but you went on to become a franchisee. So you studied optometry despite all of the odds. Yeah. Got your degree, became an optician, and took on your own franchise of Specsavers. Back then, when this was, you know, just a bit of a vision to you, you know, thinking back to the young man moving to the UK at the age of 18, English is not even a second language. English is an idea of a language at this point. Knowing that you've got that level of responsibility on your shoulders of following in the footsteps of your uncles, those father figures in your life, knowing that you want to do this to make your mum proud. How big an achievement was it when you kind of got to there? And then how did you decide? Because obviously there's been a lot of changes since then.
Yeah, 100%. Because that kind of took when I arrived 2002, did the first degree, second degree. So I qualified 2012, 2013, so 11 years later.
A true example of resilience.
Yeah, and even getting into the Specsavers branch, it wasn't an easy ride because I had a bit of a hiccup during that, and actually I left Specsavers and I worked pretty much for every single independent. And
did not know this.
Yes. So the move back to Specsavers was actually another divine intervention.
Tell us, how did this come about? Because this is a big part of who you are now, you know,
What happened is I was so hungry for becoming a director. So after I qualified, I was performing great, blah, blah, blah. But there was like a bit of a hierarchy in the branch that I was working at. There were so many kind of older, bit more experienced, to penetrate and just, although my performance was really good, I couldn't kind of
through that scene. Them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it yesterday sort of thing. And I had a bit of an argument, and I said, look, I'm done. I think I've had enough of Specsavers. I want to try somewhere else. So I tried independent. I tried going back to uni. I started an MSc and I started doing a PhD, but that was waste of time, waste of money. So I dropped that. And then I worked pretty much at 24 every single big chain and independence, and then I landed in a good place, independent chain. I worked really, really hard for them for 2 years, and I put everything into the business. And 2 years later, my daughter was born on Valentine's Day.
Oh, a gift!
Yeah, what a gift! And again, that was another, turning point in my life. At that point, I called the office. I said, look, I received Tala arrived and I need to take my paternity leave. They said, okay, fine, take it. Congratulations. But just to let you know, paternity leave is not paid, or it's you get statutory pay for it. And that was like a bit of an insult. Mm. 2 years working really hard for that company to not be recognized for it. And anyway, when I joined that company, I was promised that I will be buying shares and become an owner eventually. Mm-hmm. And when I had that, I was like, you know what? I need to meet the owner when I come back. And that's what I did. I met the owner 3 weeks later, and I said, look, where do you see me? Let's cut the chase. In a year, 3-5 years, where am I? So there was no clear vision for me in the business, and I felt like this is it. My time is up, and it's time to set light to the ship.
So this was a big analogy of you burning your boats. You've got a brand new baby.
Yeah.
You've kind of burned a bridge, or could have been looked at as burning a bridge by walking away from one of the biggest, names within that industry, Specsavers. How did you look back there? Was it a tail between your legs kind of move?
No, it wasn't really, because I think, again, everything is meant to be, really. Things are. So on the way back after that resignation, after I walked out and I had to pull over and scream in the car, what have I done? Literally 3 weeks old baby, two mortgages to pay, literally walking away from a very, well paid, six figure salary. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was unheard of, so it was really, it was a big thing.
Yeah.
But I said, look, again, I'm not looking back. There's only one way. So I pulled over, reached out to my phone, literally calling everybody on my phone, texting messages, sending emails. I'm a freelancer, hire me, I'll work. And so I did freelancing literally, Tony, from the 1st of April till the 1st of August nonstop. Because I knew that this is it. I'm not employable anymore. I will either have my own business or I will invest in properties. And I kind of did the two together, actually, because 7th of August 2017, I attended the first Misopi. Mm-hmm. And I signed up to a few courses.
As you do.
But it's almost like the two things happened together, hand in hand. 3 weeks later, after that, my offer got accepted. I got the keys for the first franchise in Ely. A year later, I got the second shop. We opened the second shop from scratch. A year later, we opened the hair care business. And COVID hit.
Yeah.
And that was another, I think, wake-up call that you can't rely on just one stream of income. You really have to you have to diversify. You have to invest properly. And running a business, it wasn't easy. Mm. You know, although I had lots of managerial experience before, but once it's your business, there's different. You are your worst boss, you know?
It's very easy to realize that you think you've had shit bosses in the past and then you become your own and realize there is far worse out there.
Yeah.
There's so much in there that I want to unpack though, because, you know, as much as you do it with a smile on your face and you laugh and you joke about burning the boats and, you know, there was only one direction that you could go in. There are many things that have happened during that time frame that would have derailed many people. I know you've dealt with a lot of highs and lows and you're very much a determined person. But, you know, rejection after rejection from the application process to get into what you thought was the stream that you wanted to get in of medicine, to then still continue, you know, have this whole change of direction. I'm going to go into optometry. I'm going to follow that route, to then be rejected again. You've always found a way. Then continue moving forward. You know, many people who are an entrepreneur inside still have the fear of, you know, or the employee mindset. There's just a smidge of it that goes, yeah, but you get paid every month. It's guaranteed. You know, you could have continued in there going, okay, they'll progress me or promote me at some point within my life. I've got a steady income. I've now got this new baby. What does it take, or what are the traits that you think make a good entrepreneur? Because there are so many things that have happened there. And I suppose my next question is, you now believe that everything happens for you. I know you've done a lot of inner work. You've spent a lot of time focusing on like the self-development. You've spent a lot of time with, you know, Tony Robbins, his kind of mentality. But surely there were times during that where you just thought, this is a load of shit. There's got to be more to life than this.
Oh yeah, always. Yeah. So, the thing is, what makes us move, Tony, are two things. Our current situation mm-hmm. has to be painful enough mm-hmm. for us to move, but also we have to have a very compelling future.
Yeah.
So our mind is very simple. It's like we are like donkeys. We still, you know, we operate with a carrot and a stick.
Yep.
But you really need to have a very painful starting point, but also a very compelling future that attracts you.
So what was the future that attracted you to it? Because, yes, you wanted to be an entrepreneur, which you did through the highs and the lows. You set up not one, not two, but you had two franchises. You moved into the here inside of the business and an additional kind of string to the bow. Yet another grenade thrown your way. Here's COVID now that you've got this started. You know, how does someone who's maybe facing those challenges now where they've realized, actually, I'm not really fulfilled in the role that I'm in and I've just been continuing through the motions because, you know, the fear of the stick hitting me is a little bit too fearful. How do you design the life? You know, what was the big vision? Was it always known, or was it just that I know I need and want something more than this?
There was always a big vision. I think The fear is going back. You know, you don't want to go back to where I was, you know. And since I moved to Syria, it's just I wanted freedom, like true freedom. You know, we were denied that for so many years, and it was so painful to live under oppressor and being suppressed and oppressed. So yeah, the seeking freedom is what motivates me. I don't know. I set big goals. And yeah. I go after them, and I'm fear. Yeah, it's scary. The unknown is scary. Like I still, you know, wake up with anxiety, with tight chest. I was like, how are we going to do this? But you know, new level, new devil. You know, it's,
I think that's important for people to know, though, as well, because there are going to be plenty of people who are thinking, I want something different, I want something more, these visions and these goals, which have led you on a path from setting up on your entrepreneurial career, you know, a vision of building a successful property portfolio. The next vision was, I want to, you know, reach kind of millionaire status. And that's not necessarily something that people who are born into such, as you say, oppressive circumstances in a world where freedom is not the done thing, and where, you know, decisions are made for you and you should be grateful for what you've got, let alone, you know, have these big visions and goals. So you're continually moving forward with that, which has led you to a path, as much as you're saying, you know, I've had these big goals. And I think it's important for people to know that you still have these fears, that each time you move up a level, and that's something that you're definitely focusing on now, that there are these challenges along the way, and that it's not always an easy ride, because it's very easy for people to look at someone who's out there. I know you've done huge things, made massive investments in terms of finances, sacrifices in terms of walking away from, you know, what are deemed to be comfortable situations. You then had another lovely little girl. You've got this family who rely upon you. And then you decided to make this goal and vision that actually, although, you know, optometry was something that I wanted to do, I've achieved that portfolio, you know, started achieving that well underway, which led you to the path where you then started hosting your networking events. What Correct. Was the drive behind that? You know, this young man from Syria who didn't speak English to now be hosting events.
And public speaking, eh?
And public speaking, which obviously played a big part in us getting to know one another. Yeah. What led to that desire?
I don't know. I don't think it was like planned, to be honest. But it's just the opportunity came, and I took it.
Probably oversimplifying it though, isn't it? Because there was an investment of time, an investment of money, neither of which you really had in abundance at that point in time.
No. But it's, as I said, you know, I saw the opportunity and I just went for it.
And it's not too much into things.
Well, funny enough, actually today, Tony, this is not, this 18th of March, this time last year was the very first time I met Elfie Best.
No way.
What are look, I've got goosebumps now. Woo! Actually, I've shared a story this morning. I'll tag you in it.
Amazing. So this is really interesting. So anyone who's listened to the podcast before will know that one of my previous guests is the one and only Elfie Best. He is known widely as the Gypsy Billionaire. Very interestingly, come from very humble beginnings.
Yeah.
Had a desire to succeed, faced many challenges along the way, including, you know, becoming a millionaire and losing pretty much everything in his late 20s, to then building a business up again to be widely now known as the Gypsy Billionaire. But the reason we mention his name, and coincidentally or not coincidentally as the case may be, is the date that you met him.
I met him. I took a selfie with Elfie at the backstage after his speech. Mm-hmm. And I put, like, jokingly, let's do business. Never miss an opportunity, Elfie.
And sent it as a message to him.
I said, well, I tagged him in the story, okay? And there we are, like literally a year later, we are business partners.
So tell us how this came about, because this is kind of, and I think it's important for people to know that you can set these big visions and goals that might feel like they are unachievable. And, you know, if we look at this as an aerial view, it should never have happened in the grand scheme of things that this young man who moved from Syria to get a good education with this vision of becoming a doctor, moving into the world of medicine, you've taken many a detour along the way, is now setting up in business with someone who for a year he idolized as a business partner, potential business partner, someone that you could learn from. Yep. How did that come about? How did this business idea come about?
Amazing. So that day, I actually signed up to take the network franchise in Cambridge, right? So I started hosting PPN Cambridge. But also on my application form that day, they said, what places do you want to choose? So I put down Cambridge, because it's local to me, / Dubai. And I handed the application down, and I actually remember Kevin reading the application. Cambridge, Dubai.
His eyes lit up. This was never a thing, because the networking event that you're making reference to, for those who don't know, is not an international thing at that point. It was all UK-based networking events. Yeah. Why Dubai? Why was that there as a vision?
Well, I've always wanted to go to Dubai. Like, Dubai's got a big thing in my heart. I've got friends and connections in there, and it's close to Syria, and I have lots of family, you know, close cousins. They lived in, my sister lived there for a few years before she moved to Canada. And, you know, I always wanted to kind of go back to Dubai. You know, it's the land of opportunities, so many benefits. It's growing. The Middle East is actually considered that part, you know, the Gulf is, believe it or not, is the safest part. You know, it's very stable. Leaders with vision. So many pluses. So yeah, so that was always something in my head. So when I submitted the application, so I went to the interview whether to accept me or not. So they said, "Oh, we like your vision. It's going to be a challenge. Do you think you can do it?" I was like, "Yeah, of course, of course I can do it." So at this time, you know, I'm contacting my friends. I was like, "Look, I secured we've got the franchise. I need your support now." But they said, "Okay, well, what's your plan? What do you want to do?" And I was like, "Look, we must link. You know, we must have this bridge linking investors and developers between the two countries. It's a golden opportunity to invest in the UK, but also it's a golden opportunity to invest in Dubai for all the good reasons. You know, tax free, blah blah blah, attractive. But you know, so why don't we do that?" So I sold that idea to them. And then I met Elfie again in another event around July time. I said, "Look, I've got this vision. Actually, we set a date. We're thinking of doing it in end of November. Would you like to come as a speaker?" He looked at me and was like, "Well, it's going to be difficult. It's this, it's that. But you know what? Yeah, I'd like to support. I like new ideas. And yeah, so why not? You know, here's my email address. Speak to my SSN, let's take it further." And he's just been super, super helpful and literally the rest is history, because he was very helpful throughout. He was the keynote speaker at the event. We
inaugural event in November 23.
Yeah. And we, at the event, we had VIP lunches and VIP dinners. And on the back of the event, 2 days later, we were invited to meet the ruler of Ras Al Khaimah, which is known as RAK, R-A-K.
Yep.
And, you know, just amazing country, really. They welcome you with open arms. "Okay, we like your idea. Why not? You know, bring it on. We'll support you. We'll help you, you know, facilitate golden visas for investors, blah, blah, blah." It's just like, I'm like, where did that come from, you know? And so one thing led to the other. At this point, I joined the Platinum Partners, because that Tony Robbins Platinum Partners. And it's been on my vision board for 3 years that I want to be Tony. I've done all Tony Robbins work. So all the training and all the proper training after COVID. And so becoming a Platinum Partner was a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. So I signed up to become a Platinum Partner to start my the year in February, right? But, you know, the past 12 months have been super challenging on so many different levels, personal, family, and all that. So I was like, I signed up, paid my deposit, but actually deep down I had doubts that I was like, I can't really do it. There's like physically the time is not possible. The financial deals, things going on, and I was like, you know, I might just pause it. Then I was invited to a Platinum Partners event. So they invited me to go to Portugal. This is at this point I have not started my year yet, because my year starts in the financial trip in February. So I went to Portugal to do business mastery. It was a virtual with only 6 Platinum Partners in there. But the energy, the vibe was just amazing. And after day 2, I had this amazing idea of actually a super duper networking event that will bring investors and kind of flip the whole training and masterminding, and we can literally take it global. And I crunched the numbers, and I was like, bloody hell, like this is, there's so much money to be made. There's so much services to help and look, why not? And on the back of that, I was like, you know what? I really can't afford not joining the Platinum Partners.
Like, if this is what happens in one day.
One event, one day, he gave me that. At the end of the event, I reached out to Alfie. I text him at 6 o'clock in the morning. I know he's an early riser. I said, Alfie, can you give me a call when you have a minute? Literally half an hour later, he calls me in the car. He said, all right, where are you, Faris? Are you in Dubai? I said, no, I'm actually in Portugal, and I've just done business mastery with Tony Robbins. He was like, okay, well, tell me, what have you learned? So I told him about the idea, and he said, you know what? This is the very first time you, dude, making sense to me. And I was like, you know, I like the idea. Okay. And I'm actually working, I'm doing something along these lines. I call it Best Wealth Network. How about we join forces on this? I was like, yeah, game on. Let's do it.
So from a challenging position, when you were having a bit of a wobble, should I really do this, shouldn't I? And many of us have been there, whether it's been, you know, quitting the job, setting up your own business, partnering up with somebody, saying yes to an opportunity, walking away, challenge around time, challenge around investment. And yet again, this is one of the reasons why, you know, you talk about whatever it is, divine intervention, the universe, something speaking to you. And you went along to this event. And I remember, because you sent me a message saying, are you free on these dates? And I was like, oh, I'm training. I'm always training. I wasn't available. I should have been there. I should have had this epiphany. But this didn't happen. It was your time to do it. You went along in spite of, you know, oftentimes people can see the outer shell and they'll see the Faris who sat there with a smile on his face, always got something nice to say about everyone. But you were going through a really tough, challenging point at this in your life at this point. As you mentioned, you know, some things going on personally, some things going on financially with fingers in pies, lots of businesses and spinning lots of plates. It would have been very easy for you not to. Were you just drawn to it? You know,
it was very easy to say no, honestly, because, and you know, I wouldn't be, I've got valid reasons not to go. But I did it, and I actually on that last day of the event, I phoned Tony Roy. I was like, here we go, here's a chat. I'm in. Take the money. I'm in. I booked my tickets and I flew to Canada, and I spent 10 magical days with like most amazing platinum partners. And most importantly, I met the legend, you know, I met Tony Robbins, because that was actually another goal of mine that I wanted to, you know, I always said, I want to meet Tony and thank him in person.
Mm.
And so the event, the financial day, on day one, every single day, and actually on day one, I don't know if I told you this story before, I got there and I said, like, it feels weird. Like, I don't belong in here.
Wow.
You know, I'm surrounded by, you know, multimillionaires, billionaires who's done it. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm a business, but I only know optics. I only know how to invest in property. Like, I'm small in here. Like, you know, the imposter syndrome kicks in. Like, I don't fit in here. Like, I feel like I'm fake. And Tony asked literally his first question is, what's your objective? Why are you in here? Why are you here today? And I wrote down, actually, I'm here to embrace uncertainty, love and connection. That's what I want, because investment, to be honest, I'm not in a position to invest in big deals and all these high tech. The things that he brought, it was just next level, you know, and people made millions on the back of that event. But I didn't feel there that I was there for that purpose. I was there literally just to embrace uncertainty and love and connection and just go with the flow. Whatever I learn, whatever comes out from here, I'm happy with it. And, you know, be careful what you wish for. Because literally whatever you ask the universe, it will deliver. Tony, I played full out during the event and I was on camera pretty much every single day. I was interacting with every single speaker. And on the final day, at that point, I was like, I still haven't had my chance to have that intervention with Tony.
Were you a little disheartened at that point?
No. The morning before we started, I just couldn't sleep. I went for a walk on the mountain and I was like, I'm going to have the intervention. I'm going to talk to Tony. I'm speaking to Tony today. Walking up and down, I physically, not just visualize it, I rehearse the conversation in my head. This is how I'm going to ask. This is what I'm going to, how I'm going to thank him. This is what I want, and take it from there. I'll probably rehearse that conversation, I don't know, tens, hundred times or whatever. 2 hours later, I kid you not, Tony picks me out of the 550 plots in that room. So
you brought it into existence.
Hello. So this shit works.
Again, so much to unpack from it, because I think if there's a message running through all of this, it's if you don't ask, you don't get. 100%. And that belief will take you a whole lot further than just wanting or needing something, that internal belief, even if you don't understand where it's coming from. Because, you know, if we go full circle back to the beginning, from very humble beginnings, you know, your life could have taken a very different course. Many people who lose a parent really young will go off the rails, you know, will move cities, countries, towns, whatever. You move to the other side of the world, it could have very easily gone a different way when you were told you can't, it's not, you know, acceptable for you. And many people would have realized that that's their lot, you know, working in the hospital overnight as a porter, going straight to the office the next morning, you know, Domino's delivery driver. And you must have these pinch me moments where you go, hang on a minute, am I still the same person who, you know, at the age of 18 left everything and everyone you knew behind to come to this, to create this whole new world? You've had many challenges along the way, but throughout every single one of them, that drive, that determination, that resilience, a need to succeed, a burn your bridges, or for want of a better phrase, a fuck you attitude that means you have no choice but to succeed, has led you to more and more opportunities, more bigger challenges along the way. Now, partnering with a billionaire, having been selected from over 550 people in a Platinum Partners room with Tony Robbins, which is the stuff of dreams for many people. I'm very conscious of time. What's next for you?
Global domination.
The other, wasn't it? A lie down or world domination? So we're going with world domination.
No, honestly, I'll take that. Yes, it is a dream. Yeah, I definitely will not settle. Is growth is one of my biggest needs that I like to keep fulfilling. But more recently, it's not about the goal. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. But actually, more importantly, it's neither the goal nor the journey. It's who you become along the way.
Read.
You know, it's I will not settle. Money is a driver for me because it's a vehicle. You know, life gives us not challenges, because life is very generous to give us opportunities, because in every challenge, it's an opportunity for growth, for becoming more resilient. So I'm enjoying this game of life, really. I call it a boot camp, you know. it's a boot camp. It's a training for resilience. And, you know, the harder we sweat in training, the less we bleed in battles, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, for me personally, it's been an absolute honor to have seen you progress in such a short space of time in the grand scheme of things, from us meeting at that first Multiple Streams event way back in 2017, to being privileged to teach you public speaking, to help you overcome some demons along the way, but to watch what is undoubtedly just the beginning of something exciting. I always ask my guests one question, so I'm conscious of time. I'm going to ask you this. What is the one question that nobody has ever asked that you wish they would? Or what is the one subject matter that you wish someone would touch upon but they never do?
What everybody should do is pick both fear and faith are imaginary thoughts. Okay? So fear will stop you, will cripple you. Faith will keep you moving forward. So I would say trade your fear with faith.
I like it. I want to say a huge thank you for your time. I know that you've got a manic life just like me, hence the reason we're doing this in our little boxes rather than face to face. Really appreciate you taking the time. It's been an absolute honor to witness your success during the last 7 years or so, and I can't wait to see what the next seven bring. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me.